Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
We are the Media Project. We are the publisher, the professor, and the editor. As I was saying just a moment ago, it seems to me, Ira Fussfeld is here, the publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York. Guy started as sports editor, worked his way all the way up.
All the way up. I'm not sure. I think it was the other way around.
You never can tell. Professor Alan Chartock, CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. We are happy to be with you. We begin with a letter from a listener.
Remember when I used to get to read the mail?
Yeah, well, we took over, competence is its own reward.
Imperialist that you are.
Catherine in Summit writes, as much as I agree with your analysis, you had said, Alan, that the New York Post was bad with its coverage of the marathon bombing and in so many other ways that we recently pointed out its failings. You attributed it to sensationalism for the purpose of selling newspapers.
Yeah.
She says, another motivation, it seems to me that Mr. Murdoch's design, whether it sells papers or not, is to foment distrust of all news and news sources. I believe that such sensationalism, she writes, breeds doubt when the truer story does become known, so that the conclusion among readers will be the government or the New York Times or WMC is hiding something from us. Further, I believe that while most of us don't fall for such tactics, there are those who do, and it is, after all, a subliminal message that could do great damage going forward.
I think that's a very good point.
Isn't that a fascinating analysis?
And not only that, but it gets worse, because if you see some woman with virtually no clothes on next to a story that is, you know, one of these things that we're hearing about, obviously, you know, there is an attempt to bombard all of your senses in such a way that you will let things that should be examined intellectually pass.
Oh, wait a minute. Why would a guy who owns multiple newspapers and television stations want to do something that will create distrust in all of the media, including his? Of all the motivations I could think of for what Murdoch does, that would be not even among the top 10.
Well, Rex is going to let me handle this. So,
I think Ira just made a good point there.
Well, no, it's an interesting point, only that, you know, rich people tend to adopt what is called a libertarian credo about diminishing government, diminishing the power of government. And that's what she said, and sources, at all sources, as well as his own. There's no question that if you take a look at the total product of Rupert Murdoch, the trouble he's in across the waters, the trouble that he's in over here, it really is a disgrace. So, Ira, I reject all of what you just said because he obviously has his own way. Look, as we get older in life, I recognize this myself, maybe you figure you're on your way out and you may as well be as irresponsible as possible.
Well, there is that. but, you know, it wasn't only the New York Post, of course, who had its problems with the Boston reporting, though it was the only outlet that continued to insist upon incorrect information when it was found to the contrary.
Sure.
But, although the AP was not only was surprisingly slow in acknowledging its error in the initial reporting as well, that disappointed me.
they relied on a single source for a story that said that, which one was it that they got wrong? Misreported that a suspect was in custody and expected in federal court. That's right. They used a single source. A number of outfits had the same error, but the AP, who you tend to believe to be accurate because they seldom make this kind of mistake, violated their own standards, and the executive editor, Kathleen Carroll, said that they deserved a shellacking for that.
The other thing was we talked last week about the missteps that CNN took when they also reported with some authority that the suspect had been arrested. And they, if you watch Jon Stewart the other night, he had a compilation of additional things that CNN did that were hilarious, unless you were CNN. I mean,
sort of just, like what?
Oh, the reporters breathlessly standing out in the street, waving to the camera, get me on the air, get
oh, no,
me
I
on the
air. No, I saw that.
You know, and,
I actually saw it when
yeah,
it happened.
And there was nothing to report. And part of the problem, of course, is they're on the air all the time and they don't have any information and they're talking to each other and they're filling time, and it collectively and in retrospect, it just looks horrible.
And yet the American people couldn't get enough of it.
Well, what I was going to say is that David Carr, the media critic in the New York Times the other day, in discussing this subject, says, in effect, we want CNN to be there for us. We look to CNN. We need CNN to be the accurate and the honest broker of news, live breaking news, because when something like this happens, we all turn to CNN first.
We're even not, the White House does.
Even the White House does. And so it's there's so much at stake for the country and, of course, CNN. And the more that this happens with CNN, the further going to go downhill. Because don't forget, CNN is trying to portray itself as the honest broker as opposed to Fox on the right
FOX.
And MSNBC. On the left. So you want to get news, you go to CNN.
Well, and they do. I mean, the fact is that despite these critiques of its performance, CNN attracted one of the biggest audiences of a decade.
And I knew it would. I mean, I sat there and I said, I wonder. I mean, you know, you got two PhDs in my house or two doctorates in the house, and people looking at the television and seeing this wild woman waving at the camera, me. And some cameraman probably got it for that.
But now, while Fox News Channel had more total viewers on Friday than CNN on cable, CNN was ahead in the audience categories that it values that draw advertisers. Yes,
sure.
It has the demographic as opposed to Fox.
Sure. And so, if the final faux pas that CNN committed was the reporter standing in the street during the day when Boston area was locked down, and she's standing in Watertown, Massachusetts, describing how quiet it is. And she said, it's as if there was a bomb dropped.
Oh.
Can you imagine the ill-advised...
I heard that too.
Unreal.
You know, the advantage we have in print is we don't have to do that.
You can read
it. That stuff goes out. Yeah, you can edit yourself.
I thought of the old Arlo Guthrie song in which he talks about the neutron bomb. And remember the neutron bomb? I think what it did was it wiped out the people, but not the buildings.
That was the notion. Something like that. That was enough for us to understand anyway.
And then he came up with a song, or Tom Paxton did, about the un-neutron bomb. Exactly the opposite. And people were walking around without any clothes.
There you go. You know, one of the interesting offshoots of this, by the way, was that there was a moment that people remember. David Ortiz, the Boston Red Sox hitter, who got up before the crowd at Fenway Park for the first game after the bombing and gave a rousing speech punctuated by some, let's say, R-rated language.
Well, he said, this is our effing city.
Yes, right.
And what do you guys think of that?
And everybody cheered and everything.
It was Boston.
There's no problem. Sounds great. And the interesting thing is that the FCC said, that's okay. But there was some question as to, there remains a question as to whether the FCC is going to crack down on this TV station in North Dakota where a brand new young co-anchor came on the air and his first words were, effing S. You know, I won't even say it here because, of course, the FCC could come down on us. But this poor guy, obviously, if you've seen the tape,
he was flustered.
The kid doesn't know
he was flustered,
anything.
And he didn't know the camera was on. And he said,
well, it's because he was trying to pronounce somebody's name and he couldn't get that right.
Yeah, probably the bombers. I had that problem, too.
Well, the problem with the station in North Dakota, if you looked at the co-anchor and the kid, is they didn't have any place being involved in journalism.
They looked like they had just walked out of class.
Yeah, they were clearly not up to the job of reporting the news to other human beings.
Well,
and
you're
so
just being a little defensive about South Dakota.
No, I'm just saying, no, this is North Dakota.
Oh,
this
North
is
Dakota.
Not my fine state of South Dakota.
And what is the difference between North Dakota and South Dakota?
Oh, my God. Oh, gosh. What's the difference between New Jersey and New York? You know, what are we talking about?
Oh, is that right?
Here?
Is South Dakota is much better than North Dakota?
Oh, by far. South Dakota
so
is a place of
all you North Dakotans that may be listening to this program right now, that's rsmith@timesunion.com.
Outrageous place. Why would anybody go to North Dakota? I can't imagine.
Now, can I just weigh in on David Ortiz? I believe that David Ortiz is understandably reflected the mood of that city and the defiance and the anger and the frustration and the we're going to survive. He could have said that in any different number of ways than using the proverbial F word.
Yeah.
And I felt in that setting, in that stadium, with families and kids there, that was the wrong way to go when it could have been done a different way. I always think about these comedians, these veteran comedians who work clean and who are very funny and who made a lot of money working clean. And they would always chastise their young up-and-coming followers for saying, you don't have to use the F word to be funny. And I didn't think he needed the F word to be defiant.
Well, you're just not with the latest thinking.
Yes, I'm not hip.
I happen to agree with you. But by the way, Ira, as long as we're being critical here, could I tell everybody who's listening that when they hear the bumping sound, it's your watch, your big heavy metal watch hitting the desk here.
Right. But the fact is, I question why the FCC would need to step in any case. It doesn't. I just think that there's a double standard that's applied here when the FCC will crack down on that kind of thing, or actually, they let them go in this case. But if you're on cable, of course, the FCC can't reach you because FCC
is not. It's the stupidest thing in the world. We've said it before. The little kid is sitting there. Mom has gone away or out of the room, and the clicker is in the kid's hand. And the kid goes, what, the kid knows the difference between channel 102 and everything under 13?
Well, now you watch also on CNN, Anthony Bourdain, who now is on CNN, the famous travel writer, food writer, who jumped from the Travel Channel to CNN. If you watched his old Travel Channel shows, he always used the S word and the F word, but it was always bleeped out. And that program now, his reincarnation of it, is on CNN, and they are not bleeping out the S word. Now,
good,
again, it's basic cable, so they can do it, but it's clearly done for some sort of an effect. I mean, I guess CNN had to consider it and say, oh, yeah, we'll put this on. It'll give it an edge, or people will talk about the program.
Well, the stuff we used to say no to around here. And, you know, I've heard it on the national feeds and other things that, you know, like P apostrophe off. And there was a big article, I believe, in the New York Times about the word scumbag and that it is now okay to use because it has other meanings, original meanings before, you know, its contemporary meaning. But people test all the time and they just...
Is that P word allowed now?
I've heard people use it,
yeah.
But I don't use it.
And the scumbag word, we actually used it in the lead sentence of an editorial this week because we quoted a tweet by New York State Senator Ball, who used that word in a tweet in which he advocated for torture of the Boston Marathon suspect.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I think he's in the tradition of Joe McCarthy, to be perfectly honest with you.
Who? This is Senator Ball, New York State.
Oh, yeah, you know, who is really... I think
well,
there's a
he's
whole
just brand, seeking coverage.
That's all it is. But so was McCarthy. And the problem, of course, is that it has some major negative consequences that affect people's lives when you do that.
But you can't, I don't think, blame the media for covering him. He was interviewed on network television.
Everybody wanted a piece of this guy.
As a result of saying, you know, we should torture the suspect. I would like to be there to torture him.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to avoid covering a public official who takes that stance.
Well, Rex, I have great admiration for you, but I think you may have put words into my mouth. You said you can't blame the media, meaning me. I couldn't blame the media.
One could hardly blame the media.
Oh, I see. I thought you were responding
to your other point. He used this word scumbag, which at one point in time was a word you could not use on the air.
Well,
or
you
in
would
an,
not
or
use.
In
I don't know that you could not, but you would not.
And so the point is, and much like perhaps with this David Ortiz thing, the line is continuing to move or the line or,
absolutely
and there are words now that we use regularly that Boston sucks or Yankees suck
I would never use
I still have trouble with that
but it's common now
it is
well
and
vacuum cleaners do that too so
we find it hard to make some of these decisions in our newsroom. You know, this is one of the things that happens to me is I'm sitting in my office at night and somebody comes in and says, can you use the word suck in a story? And actually one of the times my reference was, I said, well, is it a vacuum cleaner repair shop? And the answer was no. know, but it is really, you frequently have to make these decisions based upon what the context of the story is and where the line appears in the story. And if it is just inserted into a story for explosive purposes, yeah, then you would say no. But if in the context it's really necessary, then I think we go ahead and do it. It's just that the language has changed so quickly, the standards of language are changing, and you have to reflect that to a certain extent. It is one of those interesting editorial decisions that you run into all the time.
I must tell you, to put the final point on all of this, when I was on a local TV channel every night for years and years and years, one day I used the word titillation on the thing. I hear in my earpiece the producer of the program saying, "I'll give you $100 every time you say that word."
It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. That's Dr. Alan Shartok, the professor, Ira Fussfeld, the publisher, and I'm Rex Smith, the editor. We're happy to be with you here from the posh studios of WAMC high over Central Avenue in lovely Albany, New York. Only part of that preceding statement was true. We are happy to be with you. So the fact is, what do you think about this? It is said here, newspaper reporters, according to careercast.com, which does a survey of this, newspaper reporting is the worst job surveyed in 2013, it says here.
And what does that beat out? I mean, garbage collectors?
Yes, it beats out, it lists, it's below lumberjack, janitor, garbage collector, and bus driver. Out of 200 job categories based upon such factors as environment, income, outcome, and stress. And I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, me too. So a lot depends on what the questionnaire looked like. And who got this questionnaire?
The story does not report. I do not have in front of me the...
I mean, if it were, Rex, the reporters themselves, one could understand, you know, how they felt that they were oppressed. But, you know, especially if they were going into labor negotiation with people like you and Ira. But otherwise, it would be hard for me to believe that people in the United States as a whole think that newspaper reporting is the worst job you could have.
It's a tough job. It really is. It doesn't pay terribly well. It's high stress. The hours are tough because sometimes you have to give up dinner, give up time with your family and so on.
And you have to be sort of assertive. I mean, I saw a picture. We've just had a crisis here in New York State in which Malcolm Smith, who was once the head of the New York State Senate for a little while, has been accused of bribing people. And I saw this picture in the paper of this reporter standing right next to him, shoving a sort of handheld device next to his mouth. And I'm saying, boy, that takes guts.
Wow, that's true. It takes requires fortitude. You have to be willing to let people dislike you a lot of the time. You have to be resilient in that regard.
Mrs. Jones, how does it feel to have your son killed?
Mm-hmm.
That's not an easy thing to do.
Well, you know, newspaper reporting job has endemically had the issues that are cited in this report, which is low pay, a lot of stress, and long hours. But what is also cited and what is relatively new and can really only be felt by newspaper reporters is what is going on now in the industry, where they're just never sure whether they're going to have a job tomorrow as newspapers continue to lay people off, as well as all of the additional responsibilities that newspapers are asking their reporters to do. It's no longer here's your pad and here's your pencil and here's how to turn on your computer. Now you're carrying a camera, maybe two cameras, audio devices, video, etc., iPads for tweeting. So there's a lot on their plate, and it's made the job, it's weighs on the reporters.
And yet, there are a lot of kids who want those jobs.
Well, I don't know. Do you see that, Rex? Are you still getting a lot of resumes?
You know, it is interesting. I don't get as many applications as I used to. There are still a lot of people majoring in journalism, hoping for jobs, but I used to get resumes over the transom all the time, and I don't get as much.
I think it'll change. I hope it will change as the digital element that print newspapers has becomes more known, and young people will see there is a future because it's not the staid old print, but it's the exciting world of digital, and we want to be a part of newspaper digital.
Let me ask you a question now that we're on the subject of hiring. When you guys hire, how many times do you get a telephone call from somebody that you know or who's well thought of in the community or who has a lot of money and saying, "My grandson is very bright. Could you hire him?" Do you get that a lot?
No, I never get that. I do get people saying, "Would you give some advice to this young person who's
that's
a friend of the family?" That kind of thing. But I don't think I've ever had anybody say, "Give a job to somebody I know." I had a situation where a former publisher of the paper had a son who had gone into journalism, and we wanted to be sure that we weren't hiring him just because his dad had been the publisher of the newspaper. Mm-hmm. So it took him probably a couple extra years before he joined our staff. He's turned out to be our foremost investigative reporter.
And you had to send him down to the minors?
Well, he stayed for a while.
This is Joe Lyons?
Joe Lyons' son, Brendan
Lyons.
I
didn't know there was a connection. That's interesting.
Absolutely.
Joe is an interesting guy.
Mm-hmm.
So you shouldn't be counted. The moral of the story is you shouldn't be counted out
right.
just because you're related to somebody.
Right. And yet sometimes, you know, a connection can, I suppose it can help, but I've never actually, it hasn't helped in our case. It doesn't happen here. By the way, speaking of the survival of newspapers, there is talk about who may buy the big, powerful chain of newspapers owned by Tribune Company. 8 regional papers, including not only the Chicago Tribune, but the L.A. Times, the Baltimore Sun, the Orlando Sentinel, Hartford Courant, the Sun Sentinel of South Florida. And now there is talk that Charles and David Koch, the billionaire industrialists, the supporters of libertarian causes, they apparently are high bidders or significant bidders for
these. These are people who put a lot of money into these campaigns for Republican candidates, the most conservative candidates. Koch, in this case, is spelled like Koch, just so everybody recognizes it. And they give a lot of money away. Things are named after them all over the place. But it's a very, I mean, look, years ago, I was thinking about this. Years ago, the commercial radio stations, right, in this country were largely taken over by these people. Not the Koch brothers, but others like them who installed all of these
the talk radio hosts. Like the guy in Minneapolis, St. Paul last week who told the Sandy Hook families to go to hell. You know, those kinds of guys, those really disgusting talk radio guys now rule the airwaves and AM radio as a result of just the phenomenon you're talking about.
Their numbers
about.
Are going down.
That's true. The numbers are going down, as are the profits, by the way, of the avowedly conservative newspapers. You know, if you look at the papers like the New York Post and the Washington Times and the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, which is owned by Richard Mellon Scaife, these papers are not making money. So,
but the question is, does it matter?
Does it
matter? So in other words, if Murdoch, we talked about this last week, but if Murdoch is losing millions, but, you know, really loves owning a paper that is read by hundreds of thousands of people and gets his message across and he has enough money so it doesn't matter, maybe that's just the cost of doing business.
And would the Koch brothers be that kind of owners? Their company has annual revenues of $115 billion.
Yeah, I think it.
And all of those papers, get this, are valued together at only $623 million.
So it's a plaything. It's like somebody gave you a Slinky at Christmas.
Amazing.
I'll tell you something that's scary, similar to you talked about the legislator in Sandy Hook. There was a hacking case at the Associated Press.
Oh, this is very important.
Associated Press' Twitter account was hacked. It was reported under its name that there had been explosions at the White House and that the president had been injured. Now, pause for a half a second to say the good news here is that the other media didn't jump on it and start reporting it right away. Usually when there's that kind of a tweet, you see tweets following in a hurry. There just didn't seem something right about it. So it did not get carried away. On the other hand, our newspaper did not want to wait for the Associated Press story. So we put together 2 or 3 paragraphs explaining what happened. We put it on the website. We might have been the first ones in the country to do it because the Drudge Report, of all places, picked up our story.
Interesting.
Within 12 hours, we had 40,000 page views. And that, believe me, that is a huge number for our paper. But here's the greater point. We got a lot of comments on the stories from people, clearly, although anonymous, who would not have ordinarily seen our paper. The comments were so vile and so racist. They attracted an element of this country that we read about
as being
all the time. Out there. But until you actually see the and this was as a result of this AP hacking case,
now we should make
and they're out there.
No, we have to make clear, Ira, that it was a hacking case.
Yes.
The stock market saw it and went down.
That's correct.
As a result of this.
Although apparently they say it was mostly computerized. In other words, that there are somehow some algorithm where the computers can read what's going on and they reacted.
That's scary.
That is very scary. But some people may have lost millions of dollars.
1,800 retweets before the AP correction, before the AP realized what had happened to it.
And this can happen to any of us, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. So the concern of a contemporary information consumer has to be, what am I looking at? If you're on Twitter in particular, you would look for confirming tweets from other sources. You wouldn't take even the AP, a single tweet, as being dispositive.
We would have until I didn't see it this time.
Yeah.
Last week, we might have.
Yeah, very interesting.
And I know we've got to go, but I have to say, Harry Shearer has been fired Le Show out there in Los Angeles. They're going to continue to produce the show, but they will not play him on there. And if you go to his webpage, he's P'off.
More on that perhaps next week when we come back to the Media Project.
Finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policies...